Good afternoon, or depending on where you are, good morning. It's afternoon here on the East Coast, morning everywhere else. Welcome to our live panel discussion about education in the time of the coronavirus. Our expert panel is ready to field your questions on homeschooling, if you have kids at home who are bored when they're not schooling, what the future may hold for education during the coronavirus, after the main threat has passed. We're ready to answer all those your questions. Now, I'll preface all this by saying this is a new situation for all of us. And while Cato has expert IT staff, a tremendous conferences staff, my home studio staff is pretty much just me and my dog. My kids, I don't offer them or pay them enough that they're willing to do the job. So if I run into any technical difficulties or anybody else, please bear with us. Now, we have one very important note. If you want to ask questions via Twitter, please use the hashtag CatoCEF. That's hashtag CatoCEF. You should also see it in the lower left-hand corner of your screens. Use that, and I assure you, operators are standing by to take your questions. With that, I'm going to give a very quick introduction to our panelists. If you want to ask more, you're welcome to ask more about them, but we want to get right to your questions. So our first panelist is Carrie McDonald. She's a Cato adjunct scholar and the author of Unschooled, Raising Well-Educated Children Outside the Conventional Classroom. Our second panelist is Jessica Kohler. She writes the Beyond School Walls column for Psychology Today and is the founder of Kohler Academy. And then finally, we have Brian Ray, who's the president and founder of the National Home Education Research Institute. And so we've gotten some questions already, and I'm going to start with the first question. I'm going to send it to Carrie first, and this comes from Indie Thinker. I'm not sure that that's their given name, but Indie Thinker on Twitter, and they ask, now that Governor Northam, talking about Virginia, but we have the same situation in Kansas at least, things may have changed in the last hour or so, but now that he's canceled public school, although actually he's just physically closed the schools, but now that he's done that for the remainder of the school year, how can parents ensure that their kids don't fall behind? Carrie, we'll start with you.
I think the first thing to acknowledge is that this is a big change for all of us. This finding ourselves suddenly living and learning and working alongside our children in isolation from others is a new experience and certainly unsettling in many ways for us. But I do think it provides an opportunity, like you're mentioning, to disconnect from standard schooling. In this case, if you are in a state or a district that has canceled school and is not requiring students to complete curriculum, or in many cases, they are sending home curriculum, but it's optional or for enrichment purposes only. This gives a great opportunity to families when they can explore these incredible digital resources that are now available to us in ways that have never existed before. We see so many organizations that previously had paid content now providing that content for free. We have 2,500 museums around the world with virtual tours for us. We have streaming symphony performances and all kinds of tools. So I think this is a great opportunity for families to see what it's like to learn without schooling.
Brian, would you like to add something to that?
Yes, the first thing I think of is when a parent asks, how will we do this without them getting behind? I ask myself, are you more interested, politely, are you more interested in them not getting behind, or are you interested in them learning? So that's one of the key things. I was talking with a neighbor to my office here just last week, and he's a principal of a local public school. And I asked him, I said, are you more interested in the children learning or staying on the curriculum that the government schools provide them? And he paused a long time. And first he said the curriculum, oh, but we want them to learn too. So that's a very different way of thinking. So if you consider this an opportunity for your children to learn new things, new ways, new approaches with you a lot of the time, maybe with their siblings. This is a very amazing opportunity for you as a parent for, and for your children. Oftentimes children, just to quote, keep up and not fall behind in an institutional school, that's kind of a painful process. But when you start to relax and do this from home, it might change how your child is with learning.
Thanks. Jessica?
Well, I concur with what both Carrie and Brian are saying for sure. And I want to add that, just to validate, of course, at this time, that feeling of anxiety is so normal. This is such a time of great uncertainty. And understanding what's going on is overwhelming for all of us. And I think being concerned about your child falling behind academically is one concern. But I want to encourage parents to foremost be thinking about, you know, all these changes that are going on and the anxiety that a lot of children are going through, many children and parents. And we need to, you know, step back and make sure they're okay emotionally before we're diving right in necessarily academically. And like Carrie was saying too, we live in such a time where there are so many resources available, and it's probably the best time in history, although horrible things that happen, right? This is the best time in history. There are so many ways to connect and learn online and just in your everyday life. All of life is learning. And I think many parents, I'm talking to so many family members that are really, really stressed out about this right now. And I just want to say first, take a step back and breathe and realize there are lots of ways to connect. There are lots of ways to, make sure that your kids are still having learning experiences at home without really doing all that much. And I think that's just something that everyone needs to think about right now. And I also want to say, as a former, I'm also hearing a lot of parents that are really concerned because the schools are sending home a ton of work. I've heard this quite a bit, and they're very stressed out about that. And, as a former school psychologist, I would encourage, if that's happening and if you're stressed, make sure you're letting them know what's going on. Let the teacher know. All this uncertainty is causing a lot of anxiety, and it's getting off of my behavior, and I'm not sure what's going on. So let the school know if they're sending home that kind of work, and your kids are feeling quite overwhelmed.
Great, thanks. Now, we have a lot of questions coming in, so I'm going to get to them as fast as I can. We have one from Stephen. He asks, how do you plan for the digital divide for at-risk or any others, for that matter, communities as educations go virtual in-home? Connectivity is required, as well as relatively current hardware to run some of the educational options. Thank you. I'll just say something real fast about that, because I've been tracking some of how you go digital. And I can say that this is largely a rural problem. There are urban areas where this is a problem, and many companies are quickly providing laptops that have their own hotspots. And a lot of internet providers are working hard to get more connectivity out into rural areas as a result of this. So for just the digital part, there is no perfect solution for anybody, but there is a lot of effort being made to expand that connectivity. Now, I'll just go around the panelists to see if you want to add something to that. We'll kind of go in reverse order just for fun. Jessica, why don't you start? And if you don't have something you want to add to that, that's just fine.
Well, it's an interesting question. I live in California now, but I'm from rural Pennsylvania, and it's definitely a concern among people where I am from in the middle of Pennsylvania. And I will say that there are people doing some really innovative things. And like you were saying, connecting with different companies, figuring out ways that kids can be connected with the technology they need. And I actually just heard yesterday of a school district in central Pennsylvania that they have employees that are getting access to Chromebooks. The school district has or donations, and they're taking Chromebooks to people that have signed up for and the need for them. And they're also taking them mini Wi-Fi, kids can have Wi-Fi capability in some of these really rural areas. And it was just so exciting. And I think we all need to be looking for these innovative opportunities to help get these kids connected in especially in these rural areas. And I'm just loving what I'm seeing. Some people stepping up and, you know, these helpers that are really all over the place, really trying to help kids learn. So
terrific. Brian?
I'll be a halfway Luddite now. And I understand the digital situation. I'm on the internet all day, all those kinds of things. However, I want to remind people that in the modern homeschool movement for the past 40 years or so, for maybe at least half of that, most of the families who were doing home-based education used these old-fashioned things called books. And they had paper, and the parents had pens and pencils, and they worked with their children with pens and pencils. Maybe you cannot go to the local library right now, but on a second note, this will wake up a lot of people to say, hey, you know, maybe even though we have our children in institutional schools, maybe we should beef up a little bit in the future the kinds of resources that we have in our house. I mean, I'll remember forever and ever and ever. My degrees are in science, biology, zoology, science education. And I've taught biology in public schools and private schools. And I've taught homeschool children. And there's a little piece of a shelf in our family in the house. There are about 7 Dorling Kindersley books on science. And I'm convinced that if a child read those when he was 17 and understood them, he would probably remember more science and know more science than most adults do now after 12 years of schooling. So I just want to encourage people to start thinking not just about their digital opportunities, but their hands-on paper and pencil opportunities in their home and outside.
Carrie?
I'll just add that the Wall Street Journal several days ago addressed this issue of equal access and found that in some states, particularly in the Seattle area of Washington and parts of Illinois, districts couldn't ensure reliable connectivity and equal technology access for all young people in the districts. And so that's why they've made instances where any curriculum they're sending home is optional, which again is an opportunity for families to see what it might be like to disconnect from a typical schooling environment and explore some of these other opportunities, like Brian is saying, some of these analog opportunities, paper and pens and books, exploring outside near a child's home, and having some of this unstructured offline time to reconnect with curiosities and explore imaginations. And just to Brian's earlier point as well, focus on the learning that will happen over the coming week, being so focused on what is being lost or what learning may not be occurring.
Great, thanks. So we got a lot of questions coming in, and they, from what I can tell, remember, we're all new to this, but they seem to be trending about 50-50, about half about how do I handle this sort of schooling and educating my kids while they're at home, half about policy-related things. So I'm going to sort of split them up roughly half and half. So the next question, there's no name associated with, but they say, with schooling from home, how much time do you suggest we should dedicate to it each day, 2 to 3 hours or more? And we'll start with Brian for this one.
That's a very customized question for a customized child. But I can tell you this. I'll give you the big sweeping statistic. First of all, most of us know from 6 generations of being institutionalized that it takes schools about 6 hours to do whatever they do with your child. We also know from the last 40 years of research on home-based education, parent-led home-based education, that parents can generally do with their children in 2 to 4 hours what it takes institutional schools to do. So when I say 2 to 4 hours, if you're talking about what a lot of people call academics in the homeschool world, if you're talking about reading, writing, arithmetic, some science, some history, some social studies, you know, really for a younger child, in a couple of hours with one-on-one, or let's say you have two children or three children, you can do the academics, whether it's the direct instruction or whether it's a more relaxed approach to education or unschooling approach to education, you can accomplish in about 2 hours with younger children what it takes school all day to do because of all kinds of administrative time, wasted time, disruption time, bullying time, all those kinds of things. Maybe for older children, it's going to be 3 hours. Maybe for junior high school students, it's going to be 4 hours. And some of that depends on the academic orientation of the child. So let's say you have a child that's very oriented toward the academics, and you want to make sure, you know, that he already wants to get his 3 hours in his science and his history, and he wants to do it intensely. Let him do it. Maybe you have another child and she's not so interested in the academics, but you want to make sure she gets the 3 hours and some science and some history. So maybe only spend 2 hours and then you let her explore other things, art, piano, whatever it happens to be.
Thanks. Jessica?
I totally agree with what Brian was saying. I you know, I come to homeschooling with sort of thinking about it as a sort of bespoke education in the same way we think about like making a bespoke suit, a tailor-made for each individual child. And this is partially because I have two very different children, but and I come to this as a psychologist, and the idea of goodness of fit, figuring out what works for your child's temperament, your own temperament, your own, you know, work requirements if you're working from home as well, and, you know, making it all work together. There's no one size fits all at all in education in general, but especially within homeschooling. We have to remember, like, prescribed, I'm not a big fan of prescribed amounts of time. You know, figuring out, I have it personally, we have a son similar to one of the ones that Brian was talking about that would sit for set. He would sit and work on academics for hours and hours, and that's where he gets his joy. And then we have another child who, very small bursts of education, you know, somewhat guided educational activity and lots of play and imaginative thinking and just being creative. And they both thrive in those different environments. And so I really encourage parents to think about at this point, you know, what are your individual children's needs? What are the, you know, what are their temperaments like? How is their anxiety level right now? All those different components of where they are at this point. And then really, you know, try to figure out some sort of path for each of them, but also remembering, like, I'm seeing over and over again, parents and family members creating really detailed schedules of things, and be okay with the fact that, okay, I created the schedule last week and it worked for the first 3 days. I got to pivot. It's not working anymore. I got to change what I'm thinking, and be okay with that. I can tell you personally, I've had to do that many, many times, and just sort of, you have to roll with it.
Great. Carrie?
I can understand the tendency for families to want to come back to some kind of a routine right now when everything feels so disorienting and so much anxiety around what we're experiencing. But I would suggest trying not to replicate school at home as much as possible, minimizing some of the emphasis on the academics and focusing on instead on gathering together as a family and having this opportunity to reconnect with your children in ways that you may not have otherwise been able to, because we're all so busy with our daily activities and we're always on the go and have our own priorities. So it is a moment to really prioritize that family time and that togetherness.
Thanks. I'm just going to remind everybody who's watching, if you have questions, you can send them on Twitter. Please use hashtag CatoCEF, that's CatoCEF. And then we got a question specifically for Brian, although I have lost where it is, so I can't remember the person's name. They may not even have given it, but others may have this question. Brian, you mentioned some science books, and they'd like you to just repeat some of those.
You know, I really don't like to recommend specific publishers, but I did mention Dorling Kindersley just because they're beautiful books. And I remember that in our family, we had some of those, but there are so many different books. Some people just call them DK. And I don't have a lot of specific publishers to recommend. There's so many very, very good ones. Sorry about that.
Okay, the next question, I think this comes from Matthew on Twitter. says, what are some creative ways you've seen that educators are delivering educational materials to students who do not have internet access? And we'll start with Carrie.
I actually don't know. I haven't seen that here. I'm in Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm focused on, seeing the many digital resources that are available to families. But I haven't seen some of the offline ways that schools are dealing with this.
I've heard of schools putting out a packet of materials. Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, different schools putting in packets, like sending home large packets of information for the students to work on with the parents. And I think for some of the that works out really well, but it's also, I've noted that from some different parents, that is a little bit anxiety producing, but I've been, as Carrie has, been focused a little bit on some of the innovative techniques using technology and having some family members who are working through learning some of these different technologies, Zoom and Blackboard Collaborate and Adobe Connect, and they're all excited about those different ways that they're able to connect and actually see their students at this point. But I know there are still some old fashioned, sending home some books and some papers and stuff like that going on as well, right? So.
Okay, Brian, did you want to add something?
Nope, they got it.
Oh, great. Carrie? All right. Well, sensing no further comments on that one, I had a really good question here, but I can't remember where it was. So I don't remember the person's name, but I can give you the gist of it, which is we have seen as a result of the coronavirus response the reduction or at least the temporary removal of a lot of regulation and rules in certainly in healthcare and elsewhere, but also education. And the person who asked the question would like to know, what are the chances or possibility of those regulations not coming back? I'll just start by answering that and saying that I am somewhat hopeful that the situation that we're in now, one of the silver linings may be that people come to realize that a lot of regulations were standing in the way of innovation and the ability to quickly move things that people need and get it to them. Certainly, most people will be seeing that in healthcare, but we've had this problem in education as well. We've had a lot of, in particular, federal laws that have put requirements on schools, typically public schools, but that includes charter schools, with standardized testing requirements, lots of reporting requirements, and we saw those quickly move to the side because when things change, schools need to be able to change quickly with them. And I've also been very encouraged that school choice generally, which includes homeschooling, has enabled different models to exist, including online education, so that we aren't starting with a blank slate with coronavirus. We actually have lots of things we can look at that have already been tried. And so I hope that one of the things we leave this terrible situation with is an understanding that we don't want a lot of rules and regulations. We need people and policy to be able to move quickly, and we need to let individuals and individual communities respond quickly to situations. I don't know whether the panelists want to add anything to that, but we'll start with Carrie if she does.
Sure. Yeah, in addition to states receiving waivers for annual standardized testing requirements from the Federal Department of Education, as well as these states that are saying any curriculum is enrichment only, not mandatory, we're also seeing loosening of compulsory attendance laws. So the idea that the rest of this year won't count against a child in terms of truancy or feeling that they have to make up the time. So that's all encouraging. We'll see where that may lead. I think the more promising outcome, as Neil alluded to, will be in the area of policy. And I think that many families will be eager for more of these education choice mechanisms that enable them to be put back in charge of their child's education. They'll get a glimpse of what life without schooling is like. And that's where policies like education savings accounts in particular can be really valuable for families, where they're able to hire tutors or purchase books and materials or use that money towards classes. Those will be the kinds of education choice mechanisms that I think we'll see parents pushing more for, lawmakers should be pushing more for, that will expand education for families.
Thanks. Jessica?
I agree with what you were saying, Carrie was saying, for sure, Neil. Like, I think that we need to, hopefully this situation, you know, a terrible situation that's going on, will help us reconsider some of the regulations that are in place that really are sort of impeding our ability to innovate in times like this, and, you know, maybe come up with new pathways to quickly bypass those sort of impediments when things like this happen. But I'm hopeful that you know, we'll see, while what's going on is terrible in so many ways and super stressful to all of us, that we'll see some good outcomes in this area.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you're up.
Yes. I think it's an amazing opportunity for Americans and people all over the world, whether they're in South Korea, whether they're in Brazil, whether they're in Japan, whether they're in Russia, to realize that they do not need government controls to help children learn. And oftentimes we call these regulations. Let's call them what they are, controls. For the last 35, 40 years, different policymakers and people with a certain worldview said that homeschooling needs to be regulated. In other words, they said it needs to be controlled. If only the government could control home-based education more, the children would learn better. Well, we've done two nationwide studies. I got to do these. We divided up the 50 states and DC into high government control, medium government control, and low government control. And we found basically zero correlation between the amount of government control and children learning in a home-based environment. So I think that research has told us we do not need government control for children to learn. Secondly, we have all these government controls, and yet government-run schools still cannot guarantee that children learn. So I think this is an amazing opportunity for Americans to learn firsthand. They do not need government controls in order for their children to learn and to enjoy learning. I'm not saying all children will learn a lot and all will enjoy learning, but Americans are going to find out they do not need government control to help children learn.
Great, thanks. We still got a lot of questions coming in. I'm going to try to get as many as I can. This one is sort of a comment, but you can respond to it. When I have in-person events at Cato, I've given up on asking people to just ask a comment or ask a question, because everyone likes to comment, and that is fine. I will say, you know, I'll add the question part to this with, what do you think about that? So this one is from Barbara, and it says, I'm a teacher who used to homeschool. It's important to discuss the importance of relationships. Connect with teachers and parents to affirm the learner and keep her motivated. What do you think about that? And maybe what do you think about it in the current environment? And we'll start with, we'll start with Jessica.
I agree that the importance of connecting is an important part of education, and having the relationship. And if you're moving unexpectedly into homeschooling as a parent, making sure you keep that connection and that attachment relationship and firmly in place is really important for your child's overall mental health and in terms of their motivation. You know, there's a lot of research out there about the importance of, you know, the attachment relationship and, you know, being that connectedness in terms of, you know, being available and open to learning. So I would totally agree with what she's saying in her comments that, you know, making sure that you're not battling your kids at home, that you're keeping that, you know, fostering that good relationship and letting them have a lot of choice in terms of what they're learning will really help, you know, that autonomy, giving them some autonomy, even when they're having, even if they have packets and packets of material being sent home, figure out ways to give them choice and give them the autonomy to kind of, you know, be the captains of their own ship at home with what they're learning at home. So.
Okay, Carrie?
The motivation piece. I think it's important to remember that young children are incredibly imaginative, motivated. You know, they may not always be motivated in the ways that we think they should be motivated, but they are, you know, full of enthusiasm and inventiveness and a desire for learning. And the Boston College psychology professor, Peter Gray, forward to my Unschooled book, he says that these natural drives for learning and discovery don't sort of magically turn themselves off when a child is 5 or 6 years old. We turn them off with our coercive system of schooling. And so I think this is another opportunity for us to move away from that system of coercion and compulsion that we see in standard schooling and watch how our children's curiosities reemerge, learning and their desire for discovery are rekindled outside of a conventional classroom.
Brian?
Well put, Carrie and Jessica. And so the comment was about relationship and affirmation. I think the person said from teachers and so forth. Again, that's kind of coming from an institutional model. Remember that when you are teaching based out of the home, you have different relationships. You still have siblings, you still have parents, you still have neighbors, you still have people in your on your soccer team and in your 4-H club and your all these kinds of things. So home-based education is not exactly like what a lot of people are experiencing right now, but hopefully they will start to experience it. And when they are able to kind of emerge a little more from the, whatever we call this, distancing, then they can start to enjoy more of what homeschoolers have been enjoying for the past 35 years. And that is a lot of relationship. So while you're at home, maybe you could do relationship with grandma or grandpa on the phone or aunt and uncle or friend on the neighbor. They could say, hey, what are you doing today? What'd you study today? Or what'd you explore today? You can do those kinds of things.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the points I was hearing psychologists talking about, we're using this term social distancing over and over again. And I think it's unfortunate because more of it is about physical distancing, because we have so much opportunity now with technology to still have some social interaction. You know, we had my mom and my stepdad were super excited. We had our first Zoom family coffee last weekend. And I'm seeing so many people doing these things. Let's remember that we have all of these different technologies right now to still keep up the social piece, which is so important while we're doing this physical distancing. So that's all I want to say.
Great. Thanks. So the next is sort of a concern. It's not really a question, but a concern that a parent of a second grader has, and that she's afraid, he or she, I'm not sure, is afraid there's not enough, the school is not sending enough material for the child to stay engaged. And she says, or he says, that they're now using books they have at home, but are worried that the teacher at their school will not grade the additional work that the student is doing, and they want to know how they can handle that. I can't get from following how this is being handled around the country, assuming this is a public school, but it could be a private school. From what I can tell, most schools and districts and teachers are being very flexible. It doesn't appear right now, although of course everybody is sort of, you know, putting this plane together as we're flying it, but it seems like they're going to be very flexible about, you know, allowing people to educate their kids beyond just the packets. And it's not, it appears in many cases, there's not going to be nearly as much emphasis on grading as there is when, you know, in normal times. Some schools are moving to the idea they'll just give a pass-fail grade. So certainly you want to talk to your teacher. You want to hear what your principal is saying. If you're in a public school, you'll want to know what your superintendent is saying. But it does look like most people are recognizing there needs to be flexibility. And maybe we shouldn't be focused too much on grades, and I don't think the schools will be. But you all on the panel, you probably have some great ideas of how you can sort of construct or guide deeper learning, not for grades, but just for learning, and maybe what you can do with things you already have in the house. I'll start with Brian. I'm trying to go in random order, but of course it's not random. But so Brian, we'll start with you.
Thank you. I'm going to be really blunt, hopefully kindly, with this parent. I'm going to ask the same question I asked of the public school principal next door to my office. Are you more interested in your child, your second grader, learning or being graded? And I have a hunch you're going to say learning. So really, this is going to sound much simpler than a lot of people think it is. Let's say your second grader knows how to read. Sit down with your second grader for a half hour per day and let him or her read aloud to you, and then you read aloud to him or her. Maybe that's for a half hour, maybe it's for an hour, a variety of kinds of books. They could be off your shelves, they could be off your cell phone, they could be off your computer, online, whatever you want to be. And let's say you think, well, it's important to keep the math going. Most of us think it's important to somehow keep the math going. If you want to be more standard, more institutional, look for some kind of math curriculum that fits about where he or she is, online, wherever. Books from Walmart, whatever happens to be, wherever he or she is, then go from there. You do not have to have a packet from the public school or the private school. And let's say you're interested in keeping the writing skills going and the thinking skills going. Maybe you have your child write one letter per day and mail it in an old-fashioned envelope with a stamp to grandma or grandpa, to an uncle, to a congressman, something. It's going to be incredible. Your child is going to learn. You're going to enjoy learning together. And all of a sudden, you forget about grading.
My only question about that is, what's a stamp? Anyway, we'll now send this over to Carrie.
I think there's an opportunity to see these amazing online community gems. So I've, for example, recently discovered, because we can't get to the library or the bookstore, all of the ebooks that are available to borrow through our library website. And now there are also many other websites that are emerging with free ebooks to share with families. And so yesterday I borrowed from the library on an ebook a biography of Isaac Newton and read that to my 11-year-old son because he was interested in Isaac Newton. I've been talking about Isaac Newton throughout this pandemic because his story is relevant in that he lived in the 17th century, and in 1665, the bubonic plague hit London and closed down all of the college campuses. So Isaac Newton was a young college student at the time at Trinity College in Cambridge, fled to the countryside to his childhood home, like many college students today are doing. And it would later be called his year of wonders because he discovered gravity. He discovered differential and integral calculus. He created his theory of optics. He would say himself that it was one of the most intellectually productive times of his entire life and really laid the ground. Phenomenal and breakthroughs that we all value. So along those same lines, it's saying to families that if we focus so much on what we're losing, and of course we've lost a lot, that's not to minimize the pain that many families are experiencing right now, but it's also an opportunity to see how much we could gain and how productive and creative and inventive this time away from our typical routines could be.
Great. Jessica?
No, I want to concur with what they're both saying in terms of just remembering that all of life is learning. And, you know, whether you're looking at whatever books you have around the house or you're utilizing the multitude of technologies and classes and I mean, just things on YouTube, like Crash Course. My sons have learned so much from Crash Course Science and Crash Course History. All of these different things we have that are available. And even if we don't have the access to the technology, you know, like Brian was saying, in terms of just writing about anything you're interested in. And you know, we in our family, we've kind of in the past, this is even before the whole coronavirus hit, we've kind of taken up to like asking Alexa at dinner time, Alexa, tell us about, you know, Tokyo. And then that from there, that just flows into conversation and we talk all about what's happening, you know, in Tokyo, and dad's been there a lot for work. And then the conversation just leads you in so many different directions. You go down so many different sort of rabbit holes of learning that you don't even anticipate that will happen. And I also want to say, you know, in pulling from what I know about the cognitive science of learning, one of the most powerful things you can do is whatever is happening in your day, and you're having to do some work and your kids are off reading by themselves, or they're taking online classes, or they're doing things like Crash Course videos, at the end of the day, talk to them about what they learned. That retrieval practice, you know, pulling it out from back out from that their memory, whatever they learned during that day, is so very important for their long-term learning. And it's really, truly one of the most effective things you can do to improve their learning. So, you know, at the end of the day, when everybody's all done with their, you know, their work and their, you know, their formalized learning, you know, talk to them about, okay, what did you learn about Isaac Newton? What did you learn about Tokyo? What are those things you can tell me about it? Because just even them regurgitating, telling, and connecting it to things will be, you know, have profound effects on their learning in general.
Thanks. Now we're going to go to a question from YouTube. This is from Anonymous. They ask, do you think this will encourage homeschooling, presumably everybody being at home on computer schooling? Do you think this will encourage homeschooling, or do you think the lack of ability to allow kids to socialize because of coronavirus will adversely affect the homeschooling movement? I should say, on my own Twitter handle, which is at Neil McCluskey, I put up a poll last night asking whether or not this situation will make people more open to homeschooling. And right now, about 70% think it will make it more people more open to homeschooling. About 30% think it won't make them more open. What do you all think is the effect that this particular form of homeschooling will have on people's views about homeschooling going forward? And we'll start with Jessica.
I agree with what's happening on your Twitter. I think that it is going to just open some people's eyes, not everyone's, right? And this is just conjecture. I think that some people are going to realize, because they're sort of forced into this situation, that there are so many resources available. And hopefully they'll also realize that this isn't what typical homeschooling looks like without the ability to, you know, go out and, you know, do groups in person and all those things. But they'll realize that there's just so many resources that are available, and that it'll make them really rethink maybe some of the maybe negative perceptions of homeschooling they may have had. So my thought would be that you might see a slight uptick in homeschooling after this, but I'm not sure.
All right, Brian.
Yes, I think that I'll start with the no part of it. I think many parents are going to be doing this teaching at home, and they're going to be shell-shocked, and some of them are going to say, oh no, it's way too much work, or I want more me time, or I kind of enjoy it when the children go away to school. I'm being real honest here because I've talked with people about this, and they're going to say, never, 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 now I know I'll never homeschool. Okay, there's going to be a whole nother section of people who say, you know what? That was very interesting. And some of the things I thought about homeschooling, and I know this is not exactly homeschooling, are not true. Some of the myths are going to be busted. And I do think that a lot of parents will realize, you know what? Our children can learn and enjoy learning without a government licensed teacher. Our children can learn and enjoy learning without university trained teachers. And by the way, I was a trained teacher and I taught teachers. And our children can learn and enjoy learning without $12,000 of taxes from my neighbors. And this was kind of freeing. And this changed our family. And we start having more relationships and we're enjoying things in a way we never enjoyed them before. I'm not much of a prognosticator, but I do think that we're going to see a significant increase in the number of people homeschooling and the percent of school-age children being homeschooled next fall. I just think it's going to happen.
Carrie?
I agree. Most families, of course, will be delighted to get back to their typical work and school routines. All of us will be thrilled when life gets back to normal. But I do think that, and I would be surprised if we don't see an increase in homeschooling or virtual learning and other kinds of alternatives to school. While, of course, nothing about this experience to homeschooling, we're all isolated in our homes and not able to connect with our communities in physical ways and in typical ways. I think many families are discovering and will continue to discover these incredible resources available to them through digital technology that enables them to facilitate their child's learning without feeling like they have to be the teacher. So for example, Khan Academy, one of the probably the leading free online learning resource that's used in many schools and outside of schools, is tremendous for helping kids to learn math. And parents might say, this is great. I can use Khan Academy to help facilitate my child's math education. I don't have to feel like I need to know calculus. So I think families will see these virtual resources as being really helpful. I think families will also see, and I'm already starting to hear this from families, that their kids are calmer. Maybe their mental health has improved because the bullying at school has stopped. Maybe a reluctant reader has started to read books again because the books they're reading are meaningful to them and not tied to an assignment. And I think that families will be surprised that there can be this abundant learning outside of schooling and will want to continue that post-pandemic.
Thanks. While I'm trying to read all these questions, I realize I'm starting to lose track of who's answered the questions and who I have asked to answer them. I feel like I only asked two of you. Is there one of you I forgot? And if so, go ahead and say something if you want to, and I'll try and do a better job of keeping track of who I'm asking questions to. Is there no one I missed? That means I'm doing a much better job than I thought. All right. Well, then we'll go to the next question. And this one is really important, in particular for homeschooling, but I think also has ramifications for when the coronavirus, social distancing, or at least beyond social distancing, sort of staying in our homes is over. Chris says, since many families cannot afford to have a parent stay home to help manage a homeschool environment, if you could devise the best educational platform or school, what pieces would you bolt together to get the greatest good for the most children inside a classroom environment? And also, if you have any, I'm going beyond Chris now, if you have any recommendations of what people can do if they want to get something like a homeschool environment, but both parents have to work, just generally, how do they do that? And we'll start with Brian.
That's one of the toughest questions so far, I have to admit. So if I could be the grand dictator, I think I would say, let's try something like 9 o'clock to noon at the institutional school while that one parent or two parents work half a day, and then the children go home and be with the family. And I think that you could get the basic academics done there at the school, and then you could have all kinds of other things going on at home. That's one solution. If you want to have something like home-based education, parent-led home-based education, then you're going to have to sacrifice a little bit. Either, I'm not going to start with the premise that both parents have to work if there are two parents. We'll get to the single parent thing in a minute. But maybe the first question is, do you actually truly need two incomes working outside the home? And what are you willing to give up to not have, if you don't have two incomes outside the home? That's a very difficult philosophical, familial conversation. But there are thousands of families who do homeschool with two incomes. Sometimes it's two full incomes, sometimes it's one and a half incomes. I know that people do it and they work it out, and it's a lot of work to do, but I know they do it. The single parent family, I'm gonna pass that one on to Carrie and Jessica.
Okay, you don't get to be the moderator, but I will. So, Jessica, did you hear me?
I'm not sure if you said it, but I think there I go. Okay.
I did.
I will say that the two parents working and the single parent, it's a question that comes up all the time. I live in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, lots of innovation going on. And there's lots of families doing this. And I know quite a few families that both parents are college professors with intense workloads and they're figuring out how to homeschool. I think one of the number one things in psychology, we call it functional fixedness. We think about school and we actually think about the same hours that we have for school that most typical schools have. And really, there are a lot of other hours in the week, right? We don't have to be doing things if we're, homeschooling at exactly the same time that kids are in school. And that's one of the most amazing things about school, right? If you have kids, I have a 13-year-old who likes to get up really late and we let him, right? Because he works much later in the day. And you can manage your time if both parents have to work and figure out different, some families are blessed to have, I'm not, have grandparents around or aunts and uncles that can help with childcare and those kind of things, or taking kids back and forth to different co-ops and that kind of thing. And then you can have, I'm thinking about one particular family I know, they do most of their homeschooling on the weekend. And these kids are exceptionally intelligent, bright, knowledgeable kids. And, and they're going to this very different type of schooling. And the same goes for, I have encountered many single parents who are homeschooling, and they have to figure out different ways in terms of the childcare. And there's lots of innovative ways to be thinking about that. But they've kind of thought outside the box in terms of what can they, what hours can they use? And I think that's important. I think, I've talked to different people and they're like, wow, I haven't thought of that. That it doesn't have to be that school happens at exactly the same time that regular school happens. So.
Thanks. Carrie?
I think there's two parts to that question. The first part was if you could be the architect of an ideal learning environment, what would it look like? And the second part was, so what are some of these options for families that might have to work or single parents in terms of homeschooling? So to answer the first part of the question, I would say that I would never pretend to be an architect or want to be an architect of an ideal learning environment. I think the key is to allow each family the option to decide on the best education experience for their child. And that's where we really need to be expanding all kinds of education choice mechanisms to families to enable them to find the right educational fit for their child, and also encourage education innovation and experimentation to expand different types of learning environments and experiences. The second part of the question in terms of what are the trends in homeschooling? I think one of the things we're seeing is a lot of increased interest in hybrid homeschooling models where children might attend a learning center or some type of school a couple of days a week, and then the rest of the time is at home. We see that in the private sector with hybrid homeschool models, as well as in the public sector. In, for example, California has public charter schools that operate on this hybrid homeschool model where the kids are in school a couple of days a week and the rest of the time is home. So I think we're seeing more of that. I think we're seeing expanding networks of in-home micro schools that are either low cost or publicly funded. I think we'll see more of these innovative models appearing as families are seeking something that's more flexible for their family.
Yeah, I'll just add, pretty much what Carrie just said, which is we want to have as much school choice as possible where people can take the money that's supposed to educate their child and take it to the school that works best for them. And we do, certainly homeschooling is important. There are homeschooling co-ops, as you said, but there are also all sorts of charter schools, private schools, you've got Montessori schools, you have sort of progressive lab schools, you've got traditional schools. Somebody mentioned, one of the commenters say, mentioned the Barney Charter School Classical Academy. So there are lots of options for different people. Homeschooling could certainly be one of them, but what you want is the most sorts of educational options that you can get. That's my little editorial for this. And next I go to a question from Patrick, which I think is, you know, related to homeschooling, but is probably a tension that almost every parent feels all the time. And he says, how do you manage the conflicting desires for your child to be comfortable in a home education environment? I would also say, you know, just keep your kids happy, but also to be serious about the learning that can happen. This might be difficult for children used to quote unquote serious school happening exclusively in schools. So in part, this is a question about, well, how do you keep them feeling like school is important when they're not actually in a school building? But also maybe a even bigger point of, we often feel a tension of, we want our kids to enjoy what they're learning, so feel like often they need to really have their nose to the grindstone, because part of education is, you know, grit. And so if you want to answer the question specifically about schooling now, or that broader sort of philosophical question, feel free. And we'll start with Carrie.
I'll take the philosophical angle. Ivan Illich in 1970 wrote in his book, Deschooling Society, schooling prepares for the institutionalization of life by teaching the need to be taught. And I think we've all become conditioned to be taught. And this is an opportunity to instead embrace learning and encourage your children to learn outside of schooling by pursuing their interests, by being exposed to these digital resources and experiences through the internet that they otherwise wouldn't have had, to potentially reveal new talents, uncover new interests, and hopefully build new skills.
Great. Jessica?
Yeah, you know, to piggyback on what you, Carrie was saying, what you were saying earlier, Neil, about just choice in general, you know, we think about choice being so important, like you were saying about all the different options that to be available at a macro level. But remember that choice matters at a micro level within your own home, within your own kids, and how much that giving them that choice, that autonomy to drive their own learning and, you know, to really dive deeply into what they're interested in. And I will tell you that you will be surprised how much they actually will become engaged, and you know, you will become less concerned about that grit kind of have, you know, the buzzword we hear all the time. It's because it'll be fascinating to see it unfold when you let them guide and self-direct a little bit. Their motivation will increase. There's a lot of research out there. Daniel Pink does an excellent TED talk about, you know, the importance of giving people choice and stuff when we want them to be learning complex things. We want them to be creative. And I think sometimes we see that as adults, but we forget about that with our own kids, how much they need that opportunity to have some choice and guide their own learning as well.
All right. And we'll send it over to Brian.
All right. Real quickly, I'm going to go back to the last question about the model school situation. I was not promoting half day at institutional school. I just thought the commenter was looking for some kind of half day or some kind of model at institutional school. I'm not a fan of institutionalized schooling, especially government controlled schooling. So just for the record. Secondly, on this question, it has to start from the philosophical angle. If each one of us sitting here, the four of us panelists, so to speak, we start with a worldview, and from there we have a vision, we have an idea about what education is. So for me, I come from a Christian and a classical liberal freedom-loving perspective. Sometimes learning for an individual child is enjoyable, it's lovely, it's free-flowing, even though it's a lot of effort. And for others, there's going to be some work, some pain. Sometimes to, say, build a log cabin out in the woods, there's a lot of pain and grit and work to do what you want to do. So it really depends on the child. It depends on the goals. It depends on the objectives of education. So you always have to keep that in mind. And I don't want to be too flowery, but for example, with us, we want to make sure in our family that children learn to read, write, do basic math. And there are reasons for that, which would be a whole philosophy course. But we do want that. And then from there, we all kinds of other things. Learning. Maybe somebody likes to sew. Maybe somebody likes to do rock work. Maybe somebody likes to explore rocketry. I don't know. You have so many opportunities in a system of education that has a lot of opportunities, and that's the key. I mean, we want to give people these opportunities, and each family, this is where you find out who's in charge of your child's education. Is it you and your child as he gets older and older and older, or is it the state? So this becomes very philosophical. I believe it's parents, and that starts to share more and more and more with your child as he or she gets older. So it becomes a very philosophical issue.
Great. I have one from Jeff that I'll try and handle as best I can very quickly. They have three questions, a parent of a high school junior. One, how will universities honor the results of the truncated AP exam this year? That's the advanced placement exam, which is being reduced, as I've read, to 45 minutes. The answer to that is, I don't know. I don't think universities have made those decisions yet. They're right now just working on how they are going to cope with either online learning for the students they have right now, how they're going to adjust admissions, how they're going to adjust visits. So I don't think most universities have answers to that yet. And what is the latest news regarding ACT and SAT availability? I saw something about this yesterday. I think it was from the ACT, but also I think the SAT. I know that they have canceled some more immediate tests, but I believe they still have some later out in maybe May or June that they still have on their calendar, and they may be looking for online options. You probably just want to keep checking their websites. And then finally, any word from the service academies regarding their physical fitness testing requirements? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure they'll put that on their websites. And then now I have another question for everybody here. Although I have to find it on my little, so people who don't know, I get lots of questions on a scroll, and I had a really good one lined up. And oh, yes, that's it. So there's always a concern that some parents, maybe the parents have this concern, maybe others have it about parents. Some parents may not feel that they have sufficient education to help educate their kids at home. Or do you have advice for parents who feel that way, how they can maybe compensate for whatever they feel they may be have, or what shortcomings they may have in their own education to help to guide the education of their kids? Oh, and I forgot to say who goes first. So we'll start with Jessica.
So that's a really good question. I've heard quite a bit. And I will say, take the opportunity to connect with others who are in the trenches doing this. There are so many ways. We haven't talked at all about social media, but I am fascinated on Facebook, how many groups there are of different parents homeschooling, and the connection you can really feel. And then, of course, once we are able to, again, there's so many in-person groups all over the place. Where we live, there are just so many different ways to connect. And even if you think that you don't have, you may not, you're probably wrong, you probably do have the capabilities to do it. But if you're worried about that, realize that there are, you can utilize technology, you can utilize in-person classes, you can utilize, I know some people that have, they work with friends who, might have a degree, and one might have a degree or really, really strong in mathematics, and work together with how to formulate plans for their different kids. But realize that you can connect with so many different people that are experienced, even if you don't think you have. I don't have all the knowledge at all to be able to teach my children in every single academic area, but I'm willing to, figure out and look out and see. My older son's taking pre-calculus, and he's doing it, and there are all these live online classes that are available for that. We go back to the AP question. I actually teach AP psychology online. And we aren't sure yet, like as you were saying, in terms of what's going to completely happen with colleges, but hopefully that will work out okay. I know my students are actually very stressed about it. But I just think in terms of the question, make sure that you know that there are so many resources, whether in person, once we're able to, and online. So many homeschooling groups here in California. We have an absolutely amazing statewide homeschooling group and people that can answer so many different questions that are like available to just pick up the phone and you can call them and ask any homeschooling questions you might have at any point. So there are tons of resources to help.
Great. We'll go to Brian now.
I love that question. First of all, if you're a parent, you are competent to be a teacher. If you are a parent, you are a teacher. You started teaching your child from the moment he or she was born. So I just want to say that is a fact. That's a declarative statement. Secondly, the modern homeschool movement is proof positive that people who are high school dropouts, families in which there are two doctorates, they are competent to educate their children. And what I have found by my experience with hundreds and thousands of homeschool parents is that they are now learning things they never learned, and they're learning them with their children. Home-based education educates at least two generations simultaneously. So you might say, but I don't know U.S. history, or I don't know pre-algebra, or I don't know Spanish. First of all, it's an opportunity for you to maybe learn with your child, maybe be one tiny step ahead of your child. Maybe your child will end up being a step ahead of you. These are amazing times. Homeschooling is an amazing opportunity, if you want to call this homeschooling that people are experiencing now. So step back, relax, and figure out that wherever your child is, you go step by step from there in whatever academic subject it is. And if you are behind your child, maybe you're going to be behind. Maybe you'll be a little bit ahead. And if we want to go even to the level, if you're not literate, you don't know how to read even, if you're a parent, well, then it's time that you can get some help and you can learn how to read so that you can do these things along with your child.
Thanks, Carrie.
I'll say that if parents feel like they are not able to provide content that's equivalent to what's happening in schools, what does that say about the education they may have received in school? And is that really what they want for their children? If they don't feel competent in math, what does that say about how they learned math or how they didn't learn math? So this could be an opportunity for reflection on how we were educated and how we might want our children to be educated differently and perhaps better. But I will agree with, again, what Brian and Jessica said, that parents are very capable of guiding their children's education, facilitating their education, and connecting them to the best educational environment and resources available. I often like to give the example of my 13-year-old daughter, who's been taking Korean language lessons with a tutor several days a week for the past couple of years. And it's a perfect example where I don't know Korean language and wouldn't begin to be able to teach her Korean. This was something that she became interested in through her passion for martial arts. And so what I did was use my role as a facilitator to connect community resources to my child's interests and enable her to learn what she's really passionate about. So that's another thing for families to think about. If you're worried, oh, I could never teach my child calculus, you don't have to. You can simply facilitate that process by connecting available resources to your child.
Thanks. So we have gone into overtime here. So what we're going to do is I'm going to give each panelist, it's just like a super speed round. I'll give you 30 seconds if you have some final thought you want to offer, and then I'll close it out with a few very quick thoughts of my own. And so we'll go with Carrie first, and then I'll go with Brian, and then Jessica, you can wait till I call you, but you can think about your 30-second piece of gold you're going to offer us. So we'll start with Carrie.
Just again, this is such a stressful, unusual, uncertain time for all of us. And I think families should take the pressure off to feel like they have to keep ahead, to make sure their child isn't falling behind, that they have to stay on task with a curriculum, and instead just exhale, step back, and really enjoy this moment with your children. As stressful as it is, as difficult as it is to be working and learning together at home, we may look back and realize what a wonderful opportunity this was for connection and family togetherness.
Okay, Brian?
I would echo that exactly. Relax, enjoy your children, and realize that you've always been a teacher, you're still a teacher, and when you do something like homeschooling, I wouldn't say this exactly homeschooling for many people right now, but you're going to understand all the amazing opportunities for parent-led home-based education. And eventually when this passes by, you'll have all these connections in the community and you might never want to go back to institutional schooling again. So enjoy it. And it might take you a whole month to kind of get in the groove and figure out your style and your way of learning for your family.
Thanks. Jessica?
Yeah, to completely echo what they're saying, you know, relax and take a deep breath. Understand that your anxiety about the uncertainty that's going on is normal. Your children's anxiety is normal. I would take the opportunity to really focus on the connection and all those things that, you know, so many people are so busy in regular life. And to some extent, this is a time for many of us to play the board games. You know, we've been pulling them out a lot to play. You know, my kids, they like playing Nintendo Switch Mario Kart with their dad, and it's now become like the nightly ritual. And it's just amazing to see more connection happening. He's, you know, home all the time now and getting so much more time with them. And the connection that we're seeing happening is wonderful. So just taking a deep breath, connecting with each other, and just for all of us, remembering, you know, we should focus on the things that we can control right now in our own life and not get overwhelmed about what's going on around us. You know, focus on what we can control and focus on, you know, bringing some joy to each of our, to your day and to your kids' day each day right now, because it's so very important in this time of uncertainty.
Well, thank you very much. So we're now at the end of our event. I want to thank everybody who sent questions. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to every question. There were very many, many good questions. Maybe we'll have to do a part two of this sometime. Then I'll get to the questions that I missed. Just one or two quick sort of housekeeping issues. In October, just so you know, this is a shameless plug for a book that I've co-edited with Corey DeAngelis, but in October, the Cato book, School Choice Myths, is coming out, so you want to look for that. Also coming out, it's April 7th, is this book, I hope I'm holding it up right, called Visions of Liberty. It has a chapter on education and what education would look like in sort of a libertarian world, if we could get the ideal world we wanted, so you want to look at that. Again, comes out April 7th. You can get that at libertarianism.org or on Amazon. I especially want to give a very big thanks to the panel. I tell everyone to give the panel a round of applause. Feel free to do that in the comfort of your own home. And panel, you'll just have to pretend you're hearing it. And with all that, I thank you all for coming and participating and encourage you all to be safe. Thank you.